Today is March 4th, 2015. This is episode number 296 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, languid opportunist. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
Languid, you say?
Languid. I'm a languid opportunist.
Well, you know, sometimes you just have to take it where you can get it.
I'm also kind of an opportunistic linguist.
Which is not the same as an opportunistic linguist.
Didn't I say that? I think I said opportunistic linguist.
You did.
And so yet, it's roughly exactly the same.
Mostly pedantic.
Mostly.
It's really weird. It sounded like you didn't say that, which is why I came back and said what I did. Uh-huh. And I'm so glad that we have interns to handle edits like
yeah,
that.
I'm going to tell you that I'm going to edit that out, but then I'm not going to edit it out so that our readers, our listeners get to hear it. So don't worry about it. I'll take care of it.
Thanks. I'm really glad you're on that.
Good times. Good times.
Yeah. Why do they let us in front of the mics again?
I don't know. We're coming up on show 300. Can you believe that?
Isn't that amazing? We're only a couple episodes away.
Yeah. We are only a couple of episodes away from 300. So sometime in March. No, is that right? It's going to be close. Could be April.
Wait, I think our 300th show will be the first week of April.
It will be the first... Yeah, right, it'll be an April Fool's Day. Maybe we can do an April Fool's episode.
Well, that would only be appropriate because, like today we're doing a March 4th Fool's episode. Yeah, all right. I think that sounds awesome. It's April 1st is also Apple's anniversary.
Yep. Yep, you know, we have a sponsor today, by the way.
No, that's awesome.
We do. Linda. Lynda.com is going to be a sponsor. We're going to talk about that a little bit later.
I'm excited about that because I really like Lynda.
Yeah, likewise. Very, very likewise, so, as they say. Let's get to some topics.
Yeah, what do we have?
I don't know. Let's. Seems like it would make the best segue sense if we talked about that money thing first.
Money, money, money. Okay. That sounds good. Apple has a lot.
Apple has a lot. I tell you what sparked the conversation we're about to have is looking at that building that Apple built for at the Yerba Buena.
The little add-on building they put outside Yerba Buena for the March 9th media event, Spring Forward.
Right, which is similar to the building that they built outside of the Flint Center back in September.
Right, which turned out to be the Apple Watch debut.
Yeah, it's just a, you know, little setup, a little controlled environment for Apple to show off the Apple Watch.
Yep.
So clearly, you know, this next one's going to be a controlled environment to show off something, probably the Apple Watch and anything else that's going to be introduced.
Sure, totally makes sense.
And I'm looking at it. I'm looking at that photograph of the white building behind the Yerba Buena Center there. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, that probably wasn't cheap.
I'm assuming not.
And it's already up. So it's going to be up for, you know, 10 days, 12 days, something like that total.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not cheap.
No.
I assure you that whoever operates the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts wants money to have a big building attached to their building.
Right. That's called capitalism.
It's called capitalism, yes. Even if it's owned by the city. Still called capitalism. And it just sort of sparked a thought in my head. You know, Apple can do whatever it wants, whenever it wants. Really, to whomever it wants.
That's true. I think Apple has enough money, they could buy certain countries. Like, literally buy the country.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. If they want to put up a structure off the side of Yerba Buena Center for what amounts to essentially 2 weeks, and then take it back down, who's to say no?
Yeah, and I'm just, like, you know, thinking of... See, the reality is that Apple runs a really, really tight ship. And the company runs... Tim Cook still runs that tight ship, even as Apple is making more money than any company has ever made ever in the history of the world.
Mm-hmm.
$18 billion in the December quarter.
That's like off the hook crazy.
What were revenues? $74.5 billion. Is that right?
That sounds about right. Yeah,
something like that, right? And they made scores of billions of dollars.
I love that. Scores of. I want to hear Tim Cook say that during a shareholder meeting. We made scores of billions of dollars.
4 score billion dollars ago. They didn't quite make 4 scores, 3 score and change. But they made almost a score of dollars in profits. I mean, that's just crazy. You can do anything you want when you make that kind of money. And I was picturing this meeting where they're going over the budget for this event. And, you know, Tim Cook saying, you know, we'll just keep it under, you know, keep it under $200,000 or keep it under $1 million. I mean, they could spend $1 million on a building like this. I doubt they did, by the way, but they could, and it still wouldn't even be a line item, not really, on their P&L.
No, it wouldn't, and since Apple doesn't spend irresponsibly, even if it did cost that much, then that means they know they're going to get more than that back out of the investment.
Yeah, well, you know, Apple gets so much free press from its, so much public relations exposure.
Oh, yes.
from all of its events. So, yeah, I mean, it's not in no way am I criticizing the fact that this building exists. But what it sent me off on this thought of how does Apple, man, I mean, so you're making all that money. You can kind of do anything you want. Shareholders are going to let you do anything you want because you're making them lots of money.
Mm-hmm.
How do you maintain that discipline? I mean, you know, like, how do you not have the stairwell leading to your office diamond encrusted? because it wears better.
Oh, I hadn't even thought of that. It actually would wear better.
Really practical.
You know, now that you say it, this really makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, no slip surface, too.
Yeah. It's going to last for a really long time. It's a no slip surface. Brian, we need that in the stairwell at the Central Towers.
Yeah, we sure do, but we don't make a score of $1 billion as a profit. So, you know, we can't afford it, but they could. I mean, like, you know, why doesn't Tim Cook have a helicopter?
There are actually legit reasons why having a helicopter would be a smart thing.
Yeah. Are you kidding? Scooting around from point A to point B in a helicopter, man, it'd be a lot faster. I mean, and yet I don't think he does. I haven't heard about the Tim Cook helicopter.
I haven't heard about the Tim Cook helicopter. I haven't heard about the Tim Cook car driver, and I'm assuming he has a driver.
Well, you would think so.
It would be irresponsible for Apple if he didn't have a driver.
Unless he uses driving time as think time.
Yeah, I guess.
Which, you know, kind of, it depends on who you are. Plus, traffic in the Bay Area is it's not non-existent by any stretch of the imagination, but it's not like driving around in New York City or L.A. But still, you're right. If he doesn't have a driver, he probably should. All those top executives probably should, just from the standpoint of being able to do business.
Right. I mean, even if you just want the time to think. Being able to think where you can focus on the things that are really important for the business as opposed to thinking about the traffic.
Yeah, but Steve drove himself.
Did he? I thought he had a driver.
He drove, he would like park in the handicap spot and
Yeah, he could tell his driver to park in a handicapped spot.
Well, he would just have his driver drop him off and go park.
Yeah.
Park wherever. Anyway, the point is this. Apple maintains an enormous amount of discipline with its money, and I find it... I can't imagine the kind of discipline... I just can't imagine having that much discipline when you can do anything you want. No one is going to complain about it. And yet, you know, we don't hear about the time it encrusted stairwell. But, okay, admittedly, that's ridiculous. But, you know, we also haven't heard about the gold-plated bathroom fixtures or, you know.
Or the chamfered handrails for the staircases.
No, we have heard about that, though.
They don't have chamfered handrails.
They don't? I thought they did. Nonetheless, there's, I mean, you know, Apple is building this fancy new spaceship for headquarters, and that's certainly costing a significant amount of money.
Yes, it is.
But we've yet to hear any kind of leaks coming from that about some sort of profligate waste.
Well, I think a lot of this this avoidance of waste comes from the corporate culture that has been baked into Apple for decades. And I think it's created a sense of necessary restraint. And I think that the people that are running the company have bought into that in a very serious way. And Tim is part of that whole mentality.
Well, yeah, he is a very disciplined individual, and I mean, this, you know, this shows itself in the way Apple is run, and this shows itself in the way Apple has doubled down on secrecy, as Tim Cook told us he would do about 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It shows itself in a number of different ways, and that's, I mean, it's amazing, it's fantastic. None of this conversation is intended to complain about Apple and spending by any stretch. It's actually to marvel at that discipline. I mean, there's just so many ridiculous, foolish things that they could do wherever and whenever they wanted. Like, I bet you that building, I don't know this for a fact, but I bet you that building that they're doing at Urban Buena and that they did at the Flint Center, I bet that was designed from the get-go to be assemblable, bubble, and disassemblable, bubble, and you know, and reused.
While I sit here and laugh at at your diction, I do agree with you. It doesn't seem to me that Apple would design that sort of display area to be used once and throw away.
But they could.
They could, but that's not the Apple way.
This is just not the Apple way.
Even if the exterior, the walls, are different from what they used at the Flint Center, I bet everything that's inside is the same. Same fixtures.
Yeah, well, I bet the walls, I bet there was probably, I bet they probably designed it from the get-go to be modular and scalable.
Oh, that makes sense. It could very well be, in part, the same structure they used at the Flint Center, just with whatever other pieces needed to be in place for it to fit properly at your Buena.
Yeah, you know, and it's wired, right? It's got juice.
Mm-hmm.
It's got, I don't know. Apple is a fascinating company. And this discipline that they bring to everyday physical issues, this discipline they bring into, you know, not running around with the diamond encrusted version. What was it? Brick selling that?
Brick. Yes.
Ridiculous.
$75,000 for the top of the line model.
So this is a company. It's BRIKK. And they're offering, even though the Apple Watch isn't available, they're taking pre-orders essentially for an Apple Watch edition, that's the gold one, that they will then buy from Apple and then smear with diamonds.
smear. What a wonderful word to use.
Oh, it's so ugly looking. You know, I'm sure that they will sell some.
Of course they will. And there's some people that are going to be looking at that, and they're going to think it's absolutely beautiful, and they need to have it. Mm-hmm. And for those people, good for them. And you just wear the crap out of that watch and love every minute of it.
It reminds me of a guy I was sitting next to at the poker table years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a watch guy. Everyone, most our longtime listeners know I'm a watch guy. And the funny thing is that it's actually poker that brought me to the world of watches, because I realized that I could learn a lot about someone based on the watch that they were wearing. Now, that's a long story. I'm not going to get into it. But this particular guy had on a Rolex that had a diamond bezel. And it was a platinum Rolex. Mm-hmm. And the particular version that he had didn't come with the diamond bezel, meaning that he had bought a third-party diamond bezel.
Okay.
And you could tell that it was third-party because it was ugly. It was just ugly as can be. And on his other wrist was a platinum bracelet with three rows of diamonds. This was also incredibly unattractive. It was remarkably unattractive. That bracelet, it was a diamond delivery vehicle, you know, mm-hmm. rather than something that looked good. And the whole thing was, and he was short. He was clearly wealthy and clearly very insecure. And long story short, he ends up like someone's got a gold Rolex sitting across the table from him. And so he asks that guy about his watch so that he can then tell the table he used to have the same watch and he sold it so he could buy this one. And he announced that that guy's watch cost $18,000. So the whole point was I've got a more expensive watch than that gold watch over there. And I'm a wealthy man. And it was a fabulous display. And he was just as bad at poker as he was at etiquette. And the whole thing was fascinating. But I mean, like, that's the kind of thing that Apple could do. Apple could buy diamond delivery vehicles for their executives,
and yet they're not,
and they don't. This company is going to be studied. This era of this company in particular is going to be studied in business school for decades to come. The Steve Jobs era will be studied. The Tim Cook era is going to be studied. And then depending on what happens after whomever replaces Tim Cook fails, that'll be studied for, you know, completely different reasons.
Of course.
Or if that person or that team ends up taking Apple to even bigger heights, that'll be studied too. We're living through, you know, we who sit and stand in the Apple world and watch this company and you know, dissect its every move and use its products and you know, are absolutely immersed in the Apple way of doing things. I mean, not to be too grandiose about it, but we're living and seeing and watching a golden age of this company.
I agree. We are. This is not the Apple that people were envisioning 20 years ago.
Mm-mm.
And yeah, the company's renaissance has been just amazing. And this is the stuff that business and economics textbooks are written about.
Yeah. Yeah, and don't get me wrong, Apple has made small mistakes here and there. Apple has stumbled a couple times under Tim Cook. But, you know, each time the company has picked itself up and moved on to ever greater heights. And, you know, now we have the car.
Right.
We have the Apple Watch is coming out. You know, Apple is going in new directions and doing ever bigger things. And what was that? You wrote up a story this week about an analyst who said that it was Katie Huberty.
Yes, Katie Huberty. Yeah, she is, and I have to kind of pull numbers just out of my head. So Apple is at 800.
It's not like we do our homework. We don't prep anything.
No. I mean, why would we do that? That just wastes time.
Exactly.
Anyhow, so Apple is at is right now an $800 billion market, and she thinks that within 5 years, so in 2020, they could be like $3.4 trillion.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just practically.
And she's talking about market cap.
Yes.
So she's talking about the valuation of the company based on the number of shares outstanding times the price. So Apple is currently worth a little bit under $800 billion right now. And she's saying that by 2020, Apple could be worth $3.4 trillion.
And that's just crazy. But that also is a testament to how well she thinks Apple's current and future product lines are going to do. And
You know, the interesting thing there is that I've never felt that she really grokked Apple. She's one of those analysts. Apple always allows her to ask questions. She's actually one of the first analysts to get to ask questions. She's a pretty big deal in the world of Wall Street. But she often asks questions that I think are not good questions during the conference call. And she often seems to fixate on the wrong things, like she has fixated on market share in the past.
Well, she doesn't seem to be fixating on market share so much, although she expects that Apple's market share will grow, of course. But she's looking at the penetration Apple can have into our time. And she sees with the product lines that Apple has and where they're going, that Apple is moving in a direction where they will be able to touch on more of that time. So Apple will be the company that gets to be a part of our leisure time in a bigger way. And that part of that's through Apple Watch. Part of that's through what she sees coming for Apple TV. And part of that is Apple Car, although she does not believe Apple is making a car. She thinks Apple is going to take over the dashboard experience of our cars.
See, she doesn't get Apple. I'm not big on Katie Huberty. I'm just not. I'm really, really, really not. So that said, this is a golden age for Apple. This is a golden age to be a user of Apple devices. And and yet we still have death knells.
We do. There was a point where I was questioning if we would get more than, say, one or two a year. But we've kind of had a bit of a roll.
Yeah, there have been several lately. And we had one on Friday. And I'm pulling that up because, again, it's not like we do our homework. It's Adnan Ahmed, who is an analyst for German investment bank Berenberg. They're a big deal in Europe. And he told his clients that he thinks that Apple's stock price is going to collapse to $60 a share. And when he said that, on Friday, Apple's stock closed at $128. So he thinks that Apple's value is going to plummet by more than half. And it's all because the iPhone is Apple is over-reliant on the iPhone, and Apple is awfully reliant on the iPhone, and that Apple can't sustain its high-end premium pricing, and it simply must lower prices over time.
This sounds really familiar.
Yeah, we've heard it over and over again. He said, actually, let me actually quote here. He said, in our view, a limit to how much share Apple can take at the high end, and its price premium and recent hike must narrow over time, as it is done in the consumer electronic space, even for Apple's other products, iPod, iPad, and Mac. And yet that's not true. It's like,
okay, so yeah, there's a problem.
He actually gave three examples where that isn't the case. Mac, Apple has maintained high-end premium pricing in the computer space when it is gone in the rest of the PC industry. As a matter of fact, the only Apple Macs that don't sell in high volumes are the cheap ones, the Mac Mini. So, you know, go figure. The iPod maintained its pricing throughout its life cycle, throughout its lifetime. Mm-hmm. The iPad has maintained its price, although Apple has introduced smaller models that are less expensive. The higher end models have stayed the same price. It's like he's just wrong. I mean, it's like it's just fact. He said that the sun will not come up tomorrow because everybody knows the sky isn't blue. There's the blue sky. It's right. It's blue. It's just blue. It's right there. I mean, what the heck?
I really love when you get wound up like this. This is fun for me.
It's just wacky. It's just so. I'm going to read it one more time. As we have also stated, there is, in our view, a limit to how much share Apple can take at the high end, and its price premium and recent hike must narrow over time, as it has done in the consumer electronics space, even for Apple's other products, iPod, iPad, and Mac, where it hasn't happened. It's
well, making an argument is much easier if you have your own custom rolled facts to work with. Just saying.
You know, it. I do not live in my own fantasy world where I think that Apple cannot fail. And Apple stock has corrected many times. Yeah, all stocks correct. Even when Apple has not stumbled financially, Apple's stock has corrected and overcorrected, meaning that investors sold off their shares and the price fell. And an overcorrection is when the price falls below what a company is truly worth.
Uh-huh.
So that's what those terms mean. And this has happened with Apple, and it will happen again. Apple's stock will have some kind of correction at some point in the future. And it will most likely have an overcorrection. This is what happens in the world of investing. I mean, it will happen. But a correction to less than 50% of Apple's current value is crazy. And his reasons for it are
not based in reality.
Yeah, they're so unsound. And what's particularly interesting to me is that He pointed to Apple's over-reliance on the iPhone. Apple really is over-reliant on the iPhone for revenues and earnings. Historically, whenever any company has been too reliant on one product, when there's a problem with that product, the company tanks. Right, so this is one reason why Wall Street analysts talk about Apple's reliance on the iPhone all the time. It is a real concern. But what's interesting to me is that they don't seem to give Apple any credit for being able to recognize this and take steps to correct it.
Like come up with new products to add into their mix.
Yeah, like Apple Watch and Apple Car. Now, Mr. Ahmed doesn't think that the Apple Watch is going to amount to anything. And he's certainly entitled to his opinion. I certainly don't think that the Apple Watch is going to single-handedly, you know, the Apple Watch is not going to, like, become 35% of Apple's revenues.
I agree. I think it will be more than a line item.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be the massive revenue generator, at least on the scale that we see with the iPhone.
My friend Peter Cohen just pinged me.
Oh, how nice.
Not to be mistaken for Peter Cohen.
No, Peter Cohen is a really awesome guy.
Yeah. Indeed. So, anyway, just a little name drop in there. Oh, me? Oh, I'm cool. I'm just talking to Peter Cohen.
Yeah, okay. When was the last time you kissed Peter Cohen on the internet?
Too long. When was the last time you saw Phil Plait?
Last night.
It's awesome, man.
Yes, it is. Phil's pretty cool, too.
He is a very, very cool guy. So, going back to Mr. Ahmed, and I always got to get his name correct here. Adnan Ahmed. I love the name Adnan. I think it's a great name. He says he doesn't think that Apple Watch is going to be a thing, but he actually does think that the Apple Car is really spiffy. And so in that, a car could certainly make the iPhone less of Apple's revenues in percentage terms. It kind of seems like there's a disconnect there. And then he then kind of gives his own coup de grace on his lack of standing to talk about Apple. And he suggested that Apple buy Tesla so it can get its foot in the electric car market.
Because that's exactly what Apple's done to get into every other market. Oh, wait.
Yeah, Apple did buy one market, and that's Beats headphones.
Yes, that's true.
The first time that Apple has ever bought its way into a market, but I will yet again stress the fact that I believe that Apple wanted everything else at Beats, including the people, and had to pay for the headphones to get them.
And I'm with you. I think the headphones was just the part that came along.
Yeah. Yeah, they had, and it's a profitable part. So might as well keep it.
Yeah, so that's a nice bonus.
Yeah, it's a nice bonus. But Apple does not buy its way, with the exception of Beats, Apple does not buy its, I guess I gotta play devil's advocate. So before Beats, it was always easy to say that Apple never buys its way into markets. Right? Because it was easy to say because it was absolutely true. But maybe that's the exception. Maybe Apple now will buy its way into new markets. It's maybe possible. Beats was the first of many.
But I don't see Apple buying Tesla.
Apple could buy Tesla. Elon Musk would probably be a fine addition to Apple.
Yes.
And probably sure. be a remarkable
could,
addition.
Yes, it could happen. I just don't see it happening.
No, it's not
At least
happen.
Not right now.
It's not going to happen. And the reason why it's not going to happen is because if Apple is making a car, it's doing so because it sees a way of making a car in such a way that it can disrupt the market. And if it thought that Tesla was already doing those things, Apple wouldn't bother.
Oh, that's a really good point.
Apple would just let Tesla do the disruption. Apple's whole thing, whenever Apple enters a new market, it's about being able to control something that allows Apple to be disruptive. We saw this with the iPhone. We were told this very explicitly by Tim Cook and Steve Jobs that this is how Apple works.
Right. So if they see... That's funny. I almost said Lyft, and then I almost said Uber instead of Tesla. I don't know what's up with that. Anyhow, if Apple saw Tesla as the company that's coming in and disrupting this market, they wouldn't then jump in and say, oh, us too, we're going to disrupt it too.
Correct. That's what Microsoft does. That is not what Apple does.
Yeah. In this case, it is a Highlander scenario. There can be only one. And once a market's disrupted, then, yeah.
Well, you say that. I still think that Tesla's boat will lift with Apple's tide.
Oh, it will. But I mean, from the disruption standpoint, one company gets to be the serious disruptor and everyone else gets to ride the wave.
Right. That is very, very, very true. And Mr. Ahmed doesn't seem to understand that. He just clearly doesn't know Apple. He doesn't understand what makes Apple Apple. And he clearly doesn't understand facts. I'm still confused. There must be missing information because his statement about iPod iPad and Mac, it seems irrational. So there must be some information that's missing, either on his side or my side. I'm guessing it's his side.
That seems very, very reasonable, because if he's making statements that are patently wrong, then I have to assume that there's something that we don't know or he doesn't know.
Yeah, because otherwise he's insane, and very few people are actually insane. That's one of my big theories in life. Very few people are actually insane.
Financial advisors don't get by for very long if they are patently insane.
That's correct. So anyway, there you go. Death knell. That was death knell number 68. I've actually had two or three of them this year already. It's kind of crazy.
It is, especially since we are just now only at the beginning of March.
That
is crazy.
It is crazy. All right. You know what's not crazy?
The awesome thing is, I know you so well, I was certain that was the segue you were going with. No, Brian, what's not crazy? Do tell.
Lynda.com.
I love those guys.
I like them too. So, Lynda.com, they make training videos to teach you things. Right? Photoshop, Excel,
Keynote, GarageBand, numbers, InDesign.
InDesign, yes.
WordPress. Premiere,
Logic, Word, Pro Tools, all kinds of things. They have over 3,000 courses,
and they're adding more all the time.
Yeah, and these are taught by excellent trainers. Excellent,
yeah, people that are the top in their industry.
Yeah, absolutely, top men,
top
and women,
people.
Yeah, top people, and. And so they have all these training videos, and they have all this stuff that you can learn. And what they're doing with their sponsorship of us is they're giving you, our listeners, the chance to go try out all of the things for free for 10 days.
That's pretty impressive.
Something. It's not like for 10 days you can start something and then you're kind of screwed because you can't finish it, because it's something that's going to, you can go through whatever training videos you want to in those 10 days for free. You can teach yourself something. You can learn something new. You can learn a skill. You can just improve your hobby. You can find out exactly why that designer that works in your office seems like such a crazy nut job.
But it turns out they're not. You just didn't understand.
You didn't understand because you didn't work with Illustrator.
Right.
Because Illustrator is voodoo. I'm going to be honest. Illustrator is pure voodoo.
Okay. To be fair, even when you are a seasoned expert in Illustrator, mm-hmm. it's still voodoo. You just have a better understanding of voodoo.
Yeah, exactly. That's the whole point. Well, you could go learn Illustrator if you wanted to. You could actually... That's what I'm going to do.
That's awesome.
I'm going to poke at Illustrator.
Okay.
Because I get 10 days free too.
Yeah, we can all have 10 days for free.
Yeah, we can. All you have to do, you go to lynda.com. It's lynda.com/ACM. That's, for this podcast. Sign up.
That's very clever.
Yeah, 10 days for free. Learn something. With 3,000 different courses, there's something you want to learn. And you can do it for free. I can't stress enough how important I personally think the opportunity to learn is.
Well, learning is growing. If you're not growing, you're not living. And you want to live, right? So you need to learn.
You need to learn, yeah. You can do it. lynda.com/ACM. 10 days for free. Learn whatever you want in that 10 days. I mean, hopefully you're going to stick around and you're going to give them money because they're sponsoring us.
Right.
But we hope that.
If you don't, still take advantage of this and go learn something.
Absolutely. If you're broke and you couldn't sign up for that if you wanted to, go learn something for free for 10 days.
Yes. There you go. Oh, see, there you go. And maybe you won't be broke because you'll be able to get that job.
Exactly. All right, lynda.com/ACM. We appreciate their sponsorship. It's good to have them on board with our show.
Yes, indeed.
Let's see here. We have one more topic.
Oh, we do. Yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit about Google?
Yeah, the Googles.
The Googles. And maybe some phone call action?
Yeah. Well, so tell us what they're doing.
All right. So Mobile World Congress is just now taking off. And Google, of course, is there. And one of the things that they said is that we should expect an announcement in the coming months about how they are starting up their own cell service company or option. So instead of going out and setting up towers and antennas like AT&T and Verizon have had to do, they're going to take the MVNO path, which means mobile virtual network operator. I had to really think about it.
So they're buying bandwidth from the existing players.
Yes, like companies like Cricket do, and Virgin America, no, Virgin Mobile,
and Walmart's.
Right. Company. So we'll call that Wall Talk. Straight Talk. There we go. Yeah. And so this is what Google's planning on doing. Now they're saying is that they're getting into the business of selling us our cell contracts because they want to be able to experiment with ways to disrupt this market and ways to improve services for cell phone users. And
yeah, but how are they going to do that if they're just buying other people's bandwidth? If they're not bringing some technology to the game from the standpoint of new protocols, I mean, how are they really going to disrupt anything?
Well, one way they could disrupt is by looking at how people pay for the services they get. So instead of saying, here is your 1 gig, 2 gig, or 3 gig data plan for the month, you use 1.2 gigs every month. That's all you're going to pay for. And then in theory, you're paying less for your service because you're paying for only what you use.
They could do that, and they could also just bloody well serve ads on the darn screen.
I can see them also experimenting with the technologies because this is something they kind of hinted at, where maybe they will do things that tie directly back to Android OS, of course, that enhance the service that you get in some way.
Yeah, but they want, one of the things they're going to want is iPhone users. They've always made more money from iPhone users than they make from Android users.
All right, so then maybe they create a system on their network that uses a technology that makes it much easier to share information between Android and iPhone.
Yeah, they could do that. They could all. There's also the fact. All right, so let's back up a little bit. Let's actually look at Google's fiber broadband service that it's been building in several markets in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Started in Omaha, I believe.
I really wish it would come to Boulder.
Yeah, and it's supposedly coming to some parts of the Bay Area. Anyway, that's beside the point. Google is bringing its gigabit fiber, which is just like way faster than anything else that's being offered in the States because, despite being such a high tech country, the broadband providers have been screwing us since the get go. Most other developed countries have better broadband than we do. Fun fact.
It's amazing to think that here we are, the country that was able to put men on the moon and then safely bring them home. We can't have good broadband like other people.
Yeah. Admittedly, complaining about our broadband may be a first world problem, but that's not the point. Google's stated purpose behind its fiber optic gigabit broadband service that they charge something like $70 for,
mm-hmm.
which is, I'm paying close to $70 for 50 megabits, not a gigabit.
Mm-hmm.
through the fine folks at Comcast. Their stated goal for doing that is to make it faster for people to do more things on the internet, because when they do, Google can sell more ads. And at the same time, they don't tout this aspect of it. The more you do, the more information they have about you, meaning that they can sell that to advertisers.
And that's true.
And when you're doing it on their network, it turns out they get all of the things that you do, whether or not you're using a Google service.
That's true. Yeah, because you're now, in essence, a captive client.
Yeah, and whether or not you're visiting a website that serves Google AdSense, they know about it. So it's they get sort of a win-win for their business model. They get to serve you more ads because you can do things faster, and they know you do more things for them to gather, and they get all of those things. So it's a win-win-win.
Yeah. You're right. Anything Google can do to draw us deeper into their overall platform is good for them.
Yeah.
If we're getting something of value back out of it, okay, good for us. Like if you're on their fiber network, you get really good speeds at a much better price.
Yes. Yeah, and I'll be honest, our listeners have been hearing me rant and rave, mostly rant, about Google's business model for years now. Mm-hmm. I will probably move to their fiber broadband when given the opportunity.
I'm totally with you. If Google comes to Boulder with their fiber, as soon as my Comcast contract is up, I would just switch.
Sure. Sure. So now let's apply this to a cell network. If Google, we have this interesting dynamic at play with current cell business models. Mm-hmm. They want the folks who own the cellular networks want to get the maximum amount of money from us for the least amount of bandwidth that they have to provide.
And while on the surface that sounds absolutely horrible, it also makes good business sense
for them.
Not for us. Yeah.
And it's one of those things, like, they want us to want the more bandwidth, but they do not want us to use it. They absolutely do not want us to use it. Their best customer is the customer that's paying for bandwidth that they don't use. Their worst customer is the customer who's actually using everything that they paid for. I don't care how much money.
There's some irony in not liking a customer that uses your product.
Right. And this has been going on. And this is there's some of that with broadband providers, too. You know, they all want to offer us 50 megabits, but, you know, the deity of your choice forbid that we actually ever use it, because then they get all cranky. But that's not the case with Google. Google actually wants us doing these things, because Google gets to make money on the other side of the equation.
Right. And it sounds like they're trying to build out their infrastructure to account for all the customers they expect to have, which most carriers don't do. They essentially oversell their network.
Yeah.
Because they know most people aren't going to be using it to the fullest extent.
You're right. Absolutely. And Google, for, you know, as more and more network traffic moves to mobile devices, because that is happening, Google wants to be a part of that. Google wants to have that data, and it wants to sell those ads. And so for Google to facilitate, I mean, like, Google is probably been looking at the way cell companies, wireless companies,
have this, and AT&T's.
Right. Have this love-hate relationship with their customers. And they're saying, you know, we could do this better. If we actually make it easier for people to do things, they'll do them. And then we get the data and we get the ads.
Yes. This is called disrupting a market.
But if they don't own the towers, if they don't own the equipment, it seems like Google's opportunity to really compete here is severely limited over what it could be if it did what it's doing with the broadband space, which is build out its own network.
All right. Well, if you wanted to get into this kind of market and see and start experimenting and figure out what will work for you and what won't work for you, it's much more economical to take the more limited approach of buying time on someone else's network instead of building out your own. Because even though you don't have that full level of control that you want, you have an immediate access to a nationwide market as opposed to, say, a single city or region.
Yeah, no, it's totally true. It is difficult. A country as large as ours, or as large as China, China has density on its side. Japan has density. You know, Japan has, 200 million people, which is two-thirds of what we have, and Japan is roughly the size of California. That's one reason. Japan's cellular networks and broadband crush ours. But it's because they have the density to support it. China has that density. Russia does not have that density and has even more space than we have to deal with. Mm-hmm. There are certainly barriers. To your point, there are barriers to entry to building a cellular network that are much more challenging. Because, for broadband, you can actually offer broadband in a single market and be fully competitive because you don't need to take your broadband with you. But
true.
Today, in today's world, you know, there are a significant number of people who need to be able to use their cell phone wherever they are.
That's true. I believe we are both in that group.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, for sure. So I don't know. It's interesting. I think that Google could bring some disruption because the one thing that we didn't mention is the fact that Google doesn't need to make as much of a direct profit off of selling its pure service because it's going to be making money on the back end too.
Right. So that gives them the flexibility to really experiment with pricing plans and features.
Right, which will probably simply encourage the other cellular providers to become ever more intrusive into the things that we do too.
You know, that's a much more pessimistic take on it than I had this morning when I talked about this on TDO. I looked at it more as this would be a way of disrupting that part of the market in that companies like Verizon and AT&T would then be compelled to offer better contract options to customers.
There's a limit to what they can offer because they're making money in one direction. And customers have shown that they're not keen on their cell companies inserting ads and selling their data. And yet everyone seems to be just fine with Google doing that.
Isn't that fascinating?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's gonna. I don't know. It's gonna be interesting. I don't think Google's gonna have as much flexibility as it does with its fiber service.
That wouldn't surprise me because the contracts that they'll have to agree to with AT&T, Verizon, whoever, are going to no doubt take into account the possibility that Google could be very successful with this.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, the very people that are relying on are their competitors too. It could be interesting.
Well, Google is already posturing itself publicly by saying, and don't worry, we're not going to be competing with Verizon and AT&T. We're just doing this as our own little experiment thing. Mm-hmm. Which, regardless of what their true intent is a really smart move. Just like when Apple said Apple TV is a hobby, mm-hmm. Very smart move. Because even if your plans are bigger than it's just a hobby or just an experiment, you want people to think that's all you're doing.
Right. Right. Word.
There you go.
Huh. All right. Well, it's going to be interesting. That's going to be interesting. But I think we have a show.
I think we do, too.
Yeah.
Wow. Once again, we managed to pull all kinds of stuff together. All right, that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Indeed. You know, and while you're here, you can go to lynda.com/acm and sign up for that 10 days of free access to everything they do. We really want you to do this. Really, really, really want you to take this opportunity. In the meanwhile, our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And hey, if you don't already have plans for Memorial Day weekend this year, which is what, May 23rd through 25th?
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to be around Denver, come to Denver Comic Con, because I'm going to be there. I'm going to be conducting celebrity interviews on one of the stages.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Yeah.
I'll
be there all weekend. Come and see me and come and say hi. And then as far as the show goes, hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.